Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording of the reading and sermon from our March 13th service. Reverend Bodie's sermon title is We Are Travelers. The musical selection at the end of the sermon is Mozart's Sonata Allegro, K number 333, performed by Akui Goldstein. Thanks for listening.
I'm going to be speaking more personally than I usually do this morning. I'll be tracing a bit of my life's journey to where it connects with the journey of this congregation. And the quotes that are at the top of your order of service, you might want to take a look at those. These are ones that have been meaningful to me over the years, and they're quotations that have primarily come from individuals that I've been personally associated with, beginning with a quotation from Joseph Campbell, for whom I set up lectures in the early 1980s, and then when the lectures were over, we would spend hours winding down afterwards. A great time in my life. So you're welcome to follow along as I read these. Campbell says, "You must give up the life you planned in order to have the life that is waiting for you. If the path before you is clear, you're probably on someone else's." I've always liked that. The next two quotes come from another person that I set up lectures and workshops for. His name is Robert Bly, an outstanding poet. The quotes here are not from him personally, but he was very generous in bringing in non-English-speaking poets. And here are a couple of quotes, the first from Antonio Machado. "You walking, your footprints are the road and nothing else. There is no road, walker. You make the road by walking. By walking, you make the road, and when you look backward, you see the path that you will never step on again. Walker, there is no road, only wind trails in the sea." And this quote from the Indian poet Ghalib, "In this world of infinite possibility, I look around for the second step of desire. All I see is one footprint." In other words, I don't see a path leading far into the future. I do, however, feel and see where I ought to take that next step. And the final quote is from one of my favorite poets, Robert Frost. It's a quotation from the opening lines of a poem titled The Woodpile, and it captures in simple words the experience of starting out in one direction, stopping, considering going back, reconsidering, and going forward again. "Out walking in the frozen swamp one gray day, I paused and said, I will turn back from here. No, I will go on further, and we shall see." I'll be talking about Florence. I was just reminded of the, with the Japanese piece, that gorgeous piece, that she's currently in Japan. She's there on a, she received a scholarship. One Unitarian minister gets a scholarship, and she's now in a Shinto temple, having access that ordinarily people don't get. She'll be there for 3 weeks. I just read this on her website last night, or on her blog. Well, I want to talk on this Stewardship Sunday in a personal way about what I see and don't see for our congregation, and what I see and don't see in terms of my ministry with the congregation. And I'll start with this, that all my life I've been interested in organized religion. I came by this honestly, naturally, because organized religion was central to the small community of Lyndon, Washington, that I grew up in. Lyndon is about 12 miles north of Bellingham. At the time I was growing up, it was a population of about 2,500. Now it's about the size of Port Townsend. And I grew up with my family on a 15-acre farm about 2.5 miles north of Lyndon and then 1.5 miles from the Canadian border. The elementary and high schools I attended were part of the Lyndon Christian School System, which is related to the Christian Reformed Church, which is part of the Dutch Calvinist tradition. This past summer, I was the MC at our 50th high school reunion of Lyndon Christian High School, the class of 65. I was born August 11, 1947. And from about the age of 10, I already had it in my mind to be a minister. I didn't tell anybody. I kept it to myself. I remember in junior high, we were asked to write on a paper what profession you saw yourself being a part of, and I wrote banker. Those of you who know me know how far off that is. But I thought it sounded like a worthy occupation, but it was really a cover. I had no real intention of becoming a banker, even though I really enjoyed the board game Monopoly. The other profession I was drawn to, as many youngsters are, was that of being a professional baseball player, a pitcher. And in my case, it wasn't a complete pipe dream. Because even though I'm fairly short for a pitcher, like my father, I could throw a baseball very hard. My senior year of high school, for example, in the 50 innings I pitched, I struck out 115 batters and had an earned run average of 0.00, nothing. But when it came time to go to college, I didn't pursue baseball scholarships and instead went to the main denominational college of my Christian Reformed tradition, Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's a Christian liberal arts school of about 4,000 students, offered no athletic scholarships, and I enrolled as a pre-seminary student to study for the ministry in the Christian Reformed Church. Now, baseball continued to be an important avocation for me. I played on the Calvin College baseball team for 4 years, and then in the summers, I played on a very good semi-pro team in Bellingham, the Bellingham Bells. I refused, however, to play on Sundays because that was against the tradition. We had very close observation of the Sabbath, and that was a complete puzzle to our manager, Joe Martin, a cigar-chewing, tough-talking Italian Roman Catholic. He had no understanding of why I would not pitch on Sundays. And you know, if you're a pitcher, your rotation comes up, that messes everything up for the manager. So he was not so happy about that. Once I became a minister, however, I started playing baseball again, and I played with several semi-pro teams until I was about 40 years old, and then, ironically, as a minister, I did play on Sundays, and there were times when I had parts of my baseball uniform on under my clergy garb because the game was to start so shortly thereafter. I've gotten a little ahead of my story. So the path that I saw before me already as a youngster of 10 was a path toward ministry, and I stepped in that direction. I saw that part of the path before me. But part of the path I didn't see was that at the end of my preparation for the ministry, now that's 4 years of pre-seminary work at Calvin College, and then 4 more years of seminary work at Calvin Theological School, by the time I was credentialed to be a minister in the tradition of my youth, I couldn't do it. I couldn't go forward. I couldn't follow the prescribed route, and I had to give it up, having no idea whatsoever what was before me. And that was probably the hardest, most gut-wrenching thing that I've ever been through. The reason not surprisingly, was that my religious philosophy had shifted to such a degree that I felt I could no longer serve the religious denomination that I had grown up in. I felt it would not be fair to them, to the congregations I might be called to serve, to have to hold back so much of what I thought and felt. And I also sensed that that interior conflict would eat me up and cut me apart. And so, as Joseph Campbell put it in the quote I read earlier, I gave up the life that was planned for me for the life that was waiting for me. And as it turned out, the life that was waiting for me included, just a couple of years later, meeting and setting up lectures for Joseph Campbell. 3 glorious years, 1980 to 1982. What a wonderful man. The greatest scholar by far that I've ever met, and a beautiful person as well. And this was done at the Fountain Street Church, which is a religiously liberal, non-affiliated congregation. At that time, it had about 2,000 members. And like was described earlier by Karen, gorgeous stained glass windows in a 1,600-seat sanctuary, 5,000 pipe organ, soaring ceiling, just a gorgeous place in downtown Grand Rapids. I'll spare you the details of how I got there, but suffice it to say that I found a home there religiously and vocationally, and I stayed there as an associate minister for 22 years. I expected to stay my entire career. That was typical of the staff members. They would work their whole career there. But again, my planned life ran into a wall, had to be given up, and once again, I had to give myself over to the life that was waiting for me, which is where our paths intersect. And before I talk about that intersection, I'm going to quickly summarize the main philosophical and theological shifts that occurred in leaving the path of my inherited tradition and heading down this other route. And that shift, I talked about it last week, was this shift in the whole orientation of things from a supernaturalistic world and life view to a naturalistic world and life view, from authority residing outside oneself to residing inside oneself, from taking religion, first of all, at the literal, rational, and ethical level to taking it, first of all, in a symbolic, non-rational, and mystical level, from a focus on salvation in a future life to focus on finding the eternal, the depth dimension in the present life, holy now, as the sermon from last Sunday had it. And then finally, from seeking religious inspiration primarily in the sacred text of old to finding my religious inspiration in modern poetry, my chief religious source. So that's a quick summary of some of the basic shifts that took place for me. But what I also want to say is that I don't regard these shifts so much as a rejection of my Calvinist heritage as a reworking with them. From my Calvinist heritage, I learned the seriousness of religion. I learned that religion has to do with a total world and life view. My answers to the questions might be different, but many of the questions are the same. And what is also the same is the sense of religion as having to do with what one values most comprehensively and intensively. Frederick Carre, the philosopher of religion, says that. I learned that at Calvin Seminary. And that I have stayed with. That's not changed. Some of you may note, I have a little lapel pin, this little red lapel pin. It was purchased some years ago when Flossie and I went to a Catholic supply store in Seattle to pick up candles for our Christmas Eve service. And Flossie said, you know, you should have a little color with that gray sport coat. And I said, oh, okay. And so we looked over the pins. I said, okay, this one, this one will work for me. What it is a little Greek cross. Greek cross has the vertical and horizontal arms even, not like the Roman cross where you get it way up, but these are absolutely even. And so following the lead of Robert Johnson, the Jungian analyst and a personal friend, this is a symbol of the human being placed squarely in the middle of the meeting, at the meeting place of these horizontal and vertical arms, where you negotiate, as it were, the finite and infinite elements of being human. And so this is a little pin that keeps me connected to my Calvinist heritage. And though how I dress on a Sunday morning is not high on my list of priorities, I now feel undressed if I don't have this little pin. I've almost gotten superstitious about it. I transfer it from coat to coat. I had it yesterday at a memorial service. Anyway. So returning now to my story. I said I spent 22 years at the Fountain Street Church, and that was served primarily by Unitarian Universalist ministers. And I, too, was a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association, which went back to 1976 when I was on the South Pacific island of Guam. I was the director of a hospitality house for the Board of World Missions of the Christian Reformed Church. And secretly, I came across this little book about the challenge of a liberal faith. And I said, well, this is what I believe. So I signed on. So secretly, I became a member, a Unitarian, while I was still serving the Board of World Missions. I didn't tell anybody. But the point I'm making here is that though I was a Unitarian member, I was not credentialed as a Unitarian minister. My ministerial colleagues were Unitarian. I attended General Assemblies and all of that, but I myself had not been credentialed. I had expected, as I said, to stay my entire career at Fountain Street Church. But again, without going into detail, when the leadership changed and went in a direction that was too much at odds where I was, Flossie and I agreed that, again, we had to pick up stakes and, quote, give up the life that was planned for the life that was waiting for us, the second hardest, gut-wrenching decision of my life. The transition for the life that was waiting for us here at QUF took 3 years, led me 1 year through Tulsa, Oklahoma, 2 years as the interim minister at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Houston, Texas. And I had in mind when finally then after 3 years I became credentialed that I would serve a larger congregation since the congregation I was used to was about 2,000 members at that time. I applied to 5 congregations based on size. And Flossie threw in another little congregation in Port Townsend, Washington. The Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, odd name. She threw it into the mix because sometimes when we were visiting my parents in Linden and I was out golfing, she would take the Keystone Ferry and ride over just to see the beauty of coming into Port Townsend. It was a town that fit her idea of what a place should be. So she threw it into the mix. Again, brushing over some really interesting details, all the larger congregations that I applied to were already too far along in their process. They were set, as was this one, actually. But something switched. Somebody dropped out. They reopened it late in the game. And when all the dust was settled in the minister-congregation matchmaking exercise, we, you and I, were both down to our final option. So this better work. It did, and it has, as I judge it, and indeed both Flossie and I really like this life that was waiting for us. When we arrived here in late August, 2004, I was 57 years old, and I said openly at the time, I planned this as my last ministry. Don't abuse that statement, but there it is. I put it out there. And I was figuring on a ministry of between 8 and 10 years, because at that time I would be retirement age, and I'll come back to that in a couple of minutes. My personal vision mission for my ministry here, I've never completely been able to differentiate vision and mission, but what I had in mind for this place was to help create and foster a center for liberal religion on the Quimper Peninsula. Now, a whole lot had already been done in that direction, and I remember the first phone call I received from the search committee. This was in the winter of 2004. I remember Bob Logan asking me if I would be willing to promote the building of a new sanctuary, to which I replied in the affirmative, and which, as you see, has occurred for those of you more recently arrived. Until the winter of 2010, our services were in what is now the Fellowship Hall. One of the things we didn't quite anticipate with the building of a new sanctuary and office buildings was how the level of activity around here would jump. And that has necessitated increased staffing, which you have generously supported. 4 years ago, in preparation for the 2012 stewardship campaign, I was asked to write out what I regarded as the current appropriate ministerial staffing for our fellowship. I put down 5 different levels, the top one, the optimal one, being full-time minister, full-time assistant or associate minister, full-time ministerial intern, and an assistant to the minister in the pulpit, Joseph Benaric. He was already on staff at that time. Now, that optimal level wasn't anywhere near being financially feasible, but 3 years ago at the board level, we started looking very seriously at trying to bring in at least a part-time assistant minister. 3 years ago. But I got cold feet for 2 reasons. First, I saw a couple of our larger congregations who had 2 ministers having a hard time keeping that up, funding it, even though their salaries were much larger than the ones here. But secondly, I was concerned about what bringing in a second minister would mean just as I was nearing retirement age. In many Unitarian congregations, the attachment of its members for both good and ill is to the particular minister that they've become accustomed to. And that happened here to a certain extent when I came. A few of the members of the congregation had become attached to Rob Moore, who is the very fine 1-year interim here. But when he left, they left with him. And so I was concerned about the funding problem that would occur upon my retirement if there were 2 ministers. About my retirement, since the word has been mentioned. It was about 2.5 years ago in August that I turned 66. That's 1 year past the normal retirement age, or the expected retirement age. I had figured my ministry here for about 10 years at most. Perhaps I should think of giving the board some sense of when I plan to retire so that they can properly plan. But how much time should I give them? I had no idea, since I was enjoying the work, and how would I know how I would feel when that time came? So I spoke in confidence to my ministerial colleagues in this area. We meet about 4 times a year in my home. It turns out Port Townsend is central to the Unitarian congregations in this area, the North Olympic Unitarian group. And I said to them, I'm 66 now. I'm thinking I should give the board a couple of years. notice for my retirement. Dumb, they said. Really dumb. Don't do it. 6 months is fine, and then an interim minister will come, and don't need to worry about it. That completely freed me up. I didn't worry about it. I haven't worried about it since. Now a new scenario presents itself, which has contributed to a change in my thinking about the possibility of bringing on an assistant minister. Last year, Florence Kaplow was our fifth ministerial student intern. And I have to say, we have been blessed with wonderful student interns, each of which has brought us gifts of one sort or another. And I think we, in turn, have been a blessing to them. I believe this because I keep in touch with all of them. But last year, the fit was a bit unique. This, in terms of Florence's Pacific Northwest connections, particularly her relationship with members of the Lummi Nation, her first career as a field botanist and conservation biologist, and her overall environmental interest and activism, her longtime study and practice of the Buddhist spiritual tradition. Just a couple of years ago, she came out with a book called The Hidden Lamp, Stories from 25 Centuries of Awakened Women. She goes around and does presentations on that. Also, her aptitude and pleasure in working with younger adults in our congregation. And then her general buoyancy, good humor, keen intellect, and joy in life. It started in August 2013 when our internship selections committee, they were just beginning the process of selecting the 2014-2015 intern, and the first person they interviewed, even before any others had applied, was Florence, who was in the area working in Olympia and available for a conversation. The committee interviewed her, and they concluded, along with me, that if she wanted the internship, it was hers. We offered, she accepted, and the selections committee shut down their process without even opening it. A year later, that's last year, as our intern, I heard, as the year progressed, I heard, and I heard again, can't she stay? Nope. That's not the way the system for interns works. An intern is not eligible for a position when they've been an intern. They're not eligible for a period of 3 years, as it gives that person an unfair advantage. Well, there is an outside possibility. Rarely occurs. A waiver might be granted if you can demonstrate to the Ministerial Fellowship Committee that what you're looking for in a ministerial position would be uniquely filled by that person. And by this time, my thinking about the possibility of at least a part-time assistant minister was shifting, since if I was going to continue, I needed some help. So, since she was interested in the possibility, and I was interested in the possibility, and the board was interested in the possibility, what the heck? Why not give it a shot? See if we could get a waiver, which was attempted. We wrote letters within a week after Florence received her ministerial credentialing. That was this early October. She received that credentialing from the Ministerial Fellowship Committee. We wrote letters to them within the week, presenting as arguments the unique fit that I just mentioned. In mid-December, we received word that, what do you know? She was granted a waiver, and we spread that news immediately to the congregation. What, in brief, does hiring Florence as an assistant minister mean for QUF, for her for me. What it means for QUF, I think, is that you would have on the ministerial staff a person with really unique gifts that I think fit this congregation perfectly. What it would mean is that she could continue and deepen her work in areas that she was involved in as an intern, and these are areas that are not my particular strength. One, her social justice work, especially with First Nation peoples, and her environmental concerns. Two, her engagement with those in our congregation who are interested in Buddhist spiritual practice, of whom there are a great many and increasing. They're actually increasing all over our denomination. And three, her work with the younger adults in our congregation. It would also mean that we, she and I, would work collaboratively in the other areas of ministry: Sunday services and other ceremonies, pastoral care, adult education, administrative work. I have ideas on how that would break down. No time to detail them here. What it would also mean, as I see it, is that we would have a person who is at the cutting edge of where Unitarian Universalism and liberal religion in general is going. One of the things that we Unitarians don't have is a concrete spiritual practice. We have a lot of other gifts, a lot of other things going, but we don't have that. And Florence, who was raised as a fifth-generation Unitarian, felt that lack, that gap, growing up, already as a young person. And so when she was either in her late teens or her early 20s, she began a Buddhist study and practice to the point of becoming in 2007 an ordained Soto Zen Buddhist priest. And that was an ordination process, as she told me, that was at least as arduous as a credentialing process for becoming a Unitarian Universalist minister, which I can tell you is fairly arduous. And now she's gone back into the seminary, Unitarian Seminary. She has returned to the heritage of her youth, but she is grounded, shaped, and centered in this deep meditation practice, and to me, the qualities of that radiate from her person. I have many questions about the future of organized religion in general, and in particularly of organized liberal religion, that as I see it, if it's going to have a chance, well, Florence is on the cutting edge of what is possible there. Florence will come to us, if she comes, as an assistant minister, which is a hired position, not a called position, no vote taken. And technically, it's like any other hire on the staff. That is to say, if it doesn't work out, either from her point of view or from our point of view, we part, no harm, no foul, hopefully. But that's not the intention. The intention on both our parts is for her to come here and to dig in and to move in the direction of becoming an associate minister or maybe the lead minister. Now that, of course, would be decided by a vote of the congregation. That's called the move from hire to call. That's all open-ended. Also, a somewhat technical point. If Florence is hired as our associate minister or assistant minister, it is by way of what is called an inside candidate for the position. That means, because she has the advantage of being known to us, we have to make a decision on her before entertaining the possibility of any other candidates for the position of assistant minister. And if we open the field for two other candidates, she would not be eligible for that open position. Those are part of the rules of engagement for our ministerial association. So she would be an inside candidate. She is an inside candidate. That's why we're only looking at her. And of course, the expectation is that if we have the funding, we will offer her the position to become our assistant minister. So, question, if that offer is made, will she accept it? Here's what this means for Florence. Indeed, she would like to return here. She very much enjoyed her year here. She enjoys Port Townsend. She's part of the Salish Sea community area. And as I am saying, though technically she would be an assistant minister, she would anticipate working collaboratively with me in a kind of team ministry, which I would certainly welcome. I would love to be able to work in a team ministry with her. The point is that she will not be coming here to serve as a longtime assistant, since she believes, and I am sure, that she could find any number of other lead ministerial positions. To keep open the possibility of her returning here, she has kept herself out of the ministerial search process to this point, which I know is a bit emotionally trying for her, because positions are being filled that, were it not for this possibility here, she would be applying to them. She has told us that she will need to know about an offer from us by mid-April, because then a second round of ministerial searches gets underway. What you have here is that those congregations, it's actually a, there's more congregations seeking ministers now than there are ministers available. And so those congregations who don't find ministers will go into a second search process, as it were, when that shakes out. And she would like, she would like to be available, made available for that, so she can have a position next year. Now, I know, and the board knows, and Florence knows, that there are many persons in our congregation who didn't get a chance to know her, and maybe even weren't here when she was here. So, and that may leave some people feeling a little bit left out, feeling a little left out of this process when others are so excited, as I am, about this possibility. So to help ameliorate this situation, Florence has designed a website for us to introduce herself or reintroduce herself to us. You'll find the link to that website at the bottom of this brochure, at the bottom of the little letter that she has in the brochure that is coming out in the stewardship packet, which you could get after the service. But it's really a wonderful way to get to know her. There's a number of things I learned about her from that I hadn't known before. So please avail yourself of that opportunity. Finally, what does the prospect of having Florence as a second minister mean for me as your minister? Well, first, of course, it would help with my workload. I mentioned increasingly I'm having a hard time keeping up, and this is with a very great staff. I can't tell you what a wonderful staff we have here, but they have enough to do, and they get weighed down by having to pick up parts that I can't get to, things not really in their area. Now, secondly, who knows what the future holds? But I can see her presence extending the length of my ministry here. At this point, I continue to have the same level of interest I've always had here and in religion. And I have to say that the prospect of working in a collaborative team ministry with Florence is very energizing and very exciting for me. I very much look forward to that possibility. Now, it's not for me, ultimately, to decide how long I should be your minister. I'm saying at this point, I have the energy, I have the interest, and I would like to continue, if you're agreeable. I'm also saying I think her presence would help that possibility. About midway in the history of this congregation started in 1976, Port Hadlock, in a living room, met for 10 years there. About midway through this congregation's history in 1997, we hammered out a covenant statement that began, "We are travelers." That covenant statement and that image of travelers still seems to me to work for us, literally, because most of us have traveled to be here, but also symbolically in terms of our mindset. Who could have imagined meeting for 10 years at Hadlock, 10 years in Chimicum, 10 years in what is now our fellowship hall? Who could have imagined that we would now be here in this beautiful space? That path that led here was not laid out in advance. There were ideas, there were visions, there were dreams, but there was never a clear path. Rather, there was the sensing of where to take a step, and then where to take another step, and yet another step, until when looking back, you see that you have actually made a path. For me, the hiring of Florence Kaplow as a second minister is the next step in the evolution of this fellowship. We don't know what that will mean exactly. How could you possibly tell? But I hope that there are enough of you that agree with me that this is the next step so that we can actually make this happen. Now, there's a lot that I couldn't get to even in the lengthy sermon that I have. If you have questions, comments, I'd be most welcome to receive them in the foyer after the service or at some other time to call me. We can set up an appointment. But that's where I'm at for now. And it's been wonderful these 12 years. I'd like to keep it going for a while. I don't want to get exhausted, you know? All right. I got to get out of here.